This is RSBNB Update, episode 557, recorded Thursday, March 10th, 2016. Look at those bazongas!
Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining Mr. Colton and myself once again for RSBNB Update.
Hello, everyone.
We're back this week. In all honesty, I could not have picked a better time to get sick last week. I really came down with something right after we finished doing last week's show. And today's actually the first day I'm feeling pretty much back to normal, so we'll have to see where the voice goes after about an hour. But anyways, that's why we should be thankful that this episode of RSBNB Update is happening. It's also why we got a little bit more of a pared down version this week, namely no questions and no additional guests to us. But Colton and I were just saying we don't need the guests because we got this. Tales of the God Wars Dungeon, or Tale of the God Wars, sorry, is the official name.
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah. So this is going to be in the Caridian Desert. A bit of a lore preview for the upcoming God Wars Dungeon. Now, a question I had when we first began this little adventure, is this going to be required for everyone who is involved in wanting to go down to the new God Wars Dungeon when it comes out to do this tale?
To my knowledge, no. I've heard that it will behoove those who seek to kill the bosses within the dungeon to do the tales. I think maybe it should help you in some way. And not only that, but it also kind of gives you, if you actually pay attention to what's going on, it gives you sort of a deeper light into what is going on with the whole lore behind it, which I guess not many people are interested in, but still. I think what are the rewards or awards? There's like a shard you get from it, right?
Yeah, it's if you examine it, it says it helps you with one of the reputation systems inside the God Wars dungeon.
Yeah, and you get like 25 teletabs, which is pretty nice considering it's kind of in a remote location. It's sort of in between a lodestone and a fairy ring. It's not exactly the easiest location to get to in terms of just, boom, you're there.
Yeah.
Unless it makes it possible for the Max Garden, the Max Guild boss portal to be attuned to God Wars Dungeon 2.
Oh, they probably will. They probably will.
Yeah, unfortunately. I think they should wait a little while to let it be attuned, but that's just me.
I'm jumping ahead of myself, but after doing the tale and I clicked one of those little trinkets to teleport there, I clicked it and thinking, oh, maybe this will take me in and let me see something before it comes out. But no, it sadly does not. So there's that. But anyways, we're kind of jumping all over the place here. But anyways, what you want to do is head to the curator in the Caridian Desert, west of Narda and north of the Agility Pyramid. You know, it's good that was there, because when you think about it, what use was there for that area of the desert before, right?
Just sort of a wasteland, really.
Yeah, so that there is something there now. And this curator, when you go talk to him, he'll send you on, well, what is actually now going to be known as a tale going forward. We're going to be seeing more of these in RS. You're going to have to go and pick up some lore fragments around the world by doing various skilling and combat-related things. So there's four of them. The first one you can pick up is found at the incandescent divination energy spot south of the Poison Waste. That's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Another one you get from killing 20 of each type of grotworm in the grotworm lair. So 60 grotworms total. Not too hard. I found that this one actually took the longest.
Yeah, I felt like it was a little bit unnecessary, kind of like the... like if during the Light Within, when you have to farm all this stuff on Tarthiad, and then that was like killing all the elves or mining the crystals or fishing, you know, do you remember that part?
Yeah, I do. It was probably I think, not the part of the quest we want to look back on.
Yeah, just a little bit of fluff. I don't know if it was entirely necessary, but hey, that's their choice.
Yeah.
And it wasn't too bad.
The next one, you had to take a run through the barrows.
Mm-hmm.
And use one of the, what were they called? Memory trinkets or what did they call them?
I think they may have just called them memories.
Yeah. Use one of the memories on the finished barrow's chest. And the last one that I did was killing the general in the old God Wars dungeon, the Zamorak general, Kirill Sutsaroth, I believe is how you pronounce that. I've been probably butchering that, but we'll need to consult the pronunciation key if we're going to split hairs on that.
Nah.
I actually found that one easier, believe it or not, than the Grot Worms, because the Grot Worms took much longer.
Yeah. Even with the kill count?
Well, I mean, the kill count was easy compared to other things. It's something that you've been doing for many years, so you just do it right.
Oh, yeah. And you probably were able to get to the imps because you did not do it on release.
That's right.
So you had
that's
access
right.
to the yeah. easy kill. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did it on release, and everybody was in there, so I had to kill not the imps, which took a little longer, but it still was not bad at all.
Yeah, indeed. And then, of course, you solo Kirill. Did you solo him, or did you have help?
Oh, I soloed him.
Yeah, of course. I think that is easily doable if you have level 80 plus combat gear today, I want to say. If you have a little bit less than that, it's probably best to go do a group. And it's worth noting that you do not need to get the final blow in on the general. You just need to deal some damage to it, and that will count.
That's good.
Yes. All righty. So after that, you return to the curator in the desert, and you are allowed to watch all four of the memories and a fifth additional one that you find after bringing the four of them back. So I'll let you explain a bit about what we learned through this.
Yeah, you basically, as was said, you get four memories. The first one is the one that was collected at the, I think, incandescent energy spot,
indeed,
the divination
yep.
area in the elven area. Lands, and basically what we find from that, it's Hellweir's memory, or however you pronounce that. I'm not the greatest with these Welsh pronunciations, so I'll do my best. But Hellweir's memory takes us back, I think it's to the Third Age, and we get a glimpse at this ninth elven clan, the Saiwir elves, who we know that most clans specialize in two skill sets, but all we really know about the Saiwir elves is that they're good hunters. But anyhow, we encounter the leader, who is Hellweir, and some of his minion or helper guys, I guess, and they've been looking for a way to get back to Tarthiad because they left most of their brethren behind and when they came to Gilenor. And apparently some of their brethren had wandered over to Santistan, and all but one were captured and done mysterious, questionable things to by a human named Grigorovich. And so basically what happens is they sort of abandon mission to immediately go home and say, you know what, we're going to hunt down this guy because what he did was so abominable. And basically they just want to hunt him down and hope it one day will lead them to a way back to Tarthiad. Just sort of it seemed like a rather strange twist of events. Like, okay, we're going from trying to find our way home to now like, oh, we must seek this man's blood. But I mean, hey, I guess we've got to set up ourselves a story. So that's what happened. And so that is their motivation for finding Grigorovich. And our next memory...
Sounds Russian, doesn't he?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, maybe it's just the way I'm pronouncing it. Maybe it's Grigorovich. But to me, when I see it's ending in an E or ending in a C like that, I think Vich.
Yeah, me too. That's what I thought.
Yeah, so...
Yuri Grigorovich.
Grigorovich. Well, when... The thing is, though, is it also... His appearance, because the next memory is Grigorovich, who I believe takes us to the Fourth Age. And Grigorovich looks an awful lot like the protagonist from Breaking Bad.
Really? I've never watched that show, so.
No?
No.
Okay, well, I've only seen a little bit of it, but he bears a striking resemblance. Apparently, it wasn't intended, as has been said by the J-Mods, but make of that what you will, watchers and people who observe this memory. But anyhow, basically, Grigorovich's problem is he's been, like, super-duper sick. We don't really know with what. It seems to be some sort of terminal illness, and he's kind of like a mad scientist who's been going around looking for a way to extend his life. And that's what he was doing with the elves, is because the elves have naturally a much longer lifespan than humans.
Right.
And so he's been trying to extract that sort of life essence from them. And that's what he was doing with the Cywer elves that we encountered in the previous memory. So he basically comes to Sliske saying, you know what? Everything I've been trying hasn't worked. This is kind of my last chance, and basically says, you know what? I'm going to sell my soul to you. Do with it what you will.
Oh, that's a horrible mistake to make.
Yeah, with Sliske especially. And so Sliske basically says, you know what? That's fine. I'm going to make you into a monster. And he makes him into this like weird misshapen thing that is doomed to consume other beings. And his only way of gaining power is through consuming more powerful beings. He is constantly compelled to consume the flesh of his enemies. And so he's kind of like this creepy, like, yeah, all-consuming beast.
Yeah, I got a photo of him, and I don't see how that looks like the main character from Breaking Bad after Googling them both.
Oh, no. Not his transformed form. It's when he comes to Sliske originally.
Oh, okay.
When he's got, like, his hood up, and he looks like Heisenberg. But anyhow, yeah, so that's his thing. And he looks like, I don't know, like this weird, like, almost like a jester mixed with some...
You know, that looks like any kind of person you'd see in the mid-90s walking down the street.
Yeah, is that so?
Yeah.
I guess I wouldn't know.
Well, I mean minus the hat, but, you know.
And all the spinning blades and things like that? Was that typical of the mid-90s?
No, that part was not.
Okay, just making sure. But, yeah, that's Grigorovich, and he... is representing Sliske, as you can tell. Hal Weir is representing Saren. And then we move on to our third memory, which is of the Twin Furies. Their memory takes us not far back, actually the Sixth Age, where Zamorak is in Daemonheim. And we, the Twin Fairies, Furies, not fairies, they kind of look like fairies, like demonic fairies.
Okay, maybe.
They're demons. They're demonic fairies. And they are Avaris and Nymora, or Nymora, however you would like to pronounce that. And basically what their deal is they had been sent by Zamorak to eliminate the remaining Iluyanka, the Dragon Riders, as we have come to know them. And basically they've been successful for the most part. But apparently there was rumor that one of the Iluyanka eggs was taken by the dragon Gorvek, who they had let escape. And so there might be one last Iluyanka left. Last rider. But they also reveal that they have a sister, another sister. So maybe they're not exactly twin furies. They're triplet furies. Had she not also... come to be victim of Grigorovich's experimentations. So now they have motivation to go after Grigorovich. So they're basically sent out in the end to seek out the Dragon Rider egg, the Iluyanka egg, but end up sort of encountering Grigorovich along the way, which we'll encounter in the final memory. But that's how they are sent from Zamorak's presence. And then we, our last memory of the four was Vindicta, who is the aforementioned Iluyanka egg, grown up. Basically, what we see is the dragon Gorvek takes the egg and sort of brings it to the QBD layer, which is sort of a secure location and a bit of a sanctuary where Gorvek apparently raises Vindicta among the dragons and sort of prepares it prepares her for battle. It is female, Vindicta is, although you can't really tell given the copious amount of armor that Vindicta ends up wearing.
You couldn't tell back in the early RuneScape days what was female and what was male.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, there were some differences in character models, at least with clothing, if you paid enough attention to everything. Yeah. There and basically she comes out, she emerges after you see her egg being secured. She emerges like fully grown centuries later and has a bit of a vendetta against the Twin Furies who killed all but her. So she's after them, and the Twin Furies and Hellweir are after Grigorovich, and Grigorovich is just after eating powerful beings. So we're all staged for this sort of final showdown where in the final memory, they all approach each other next to the heart, guns pointed at various directions. Everyone, and it's that classic like standoff where everyone's pointing at each other and then they switch back. And so that's sort of the situation that we come to with the final memory with everyone at the heart. Basically, everyone's just going through in this cutscene why they're there. One interesting thing is that Hellweir says that he's found a way back to Tarthiad. Unfortunately, I think once he finds his way back to Tarthiad, he'll find that those that they left behind have become those crystal shapeshifters mm-hmm. and are no longer recognizable. So that's kind of sad. So, but I doubt he'll ever leave the dungeon, given that this will now be a permanent fixture, at least we think, of the game.
Of course, of course.
I doubt he'll ever find a
Hopefully.
Way back. The Twin Furies have been, it appears to be, they've been directly commanded by Zamorak to take the heart. So they actually, of all four of them, seem to have the most authority from the direct deity that they are representing. Vindicta claims to have command of Zarosian forces, but, I mean, never really says that Zaros has directly sort of said that this is given it the stamp of approval or anything like that. So that's sort of interesting. And obviously, Saren hasn't had anything to say to Hellweir because she is a pacifist. And so this seems like sort of counterintuitive to the whole Saren.
Yeah, and you know, before looking at this that memory and this piece of content as a whole, I was wondering, okay, so how are we going to fit Saren into this?
Yeah, it's basically just that these elves have gone rogue, you know. They're not really I don't know if it'll be interesting to see if we get to talk to Saren while this is going on, if she will disavow what they're doing and say that what they're doing is wrong and I don't recognize anything that they're doing for my name. I don't think it's a good thing. Or if she'll just sort of give it the blind eye, you know. Who knows? It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, and I think it would ultimately come down to a matter of escalation as to whether or not it's something that is, you know, going to have a massive role on the elves as a whole, because as I understand it, it's just the one clan that's going to be fighting, right?
Yeah, that's what it appears to be. It appears just to be the Cywer elves.
Yeah, so I mean, it kind of makes sense from that point of view, and it's been well established that Saren doesn't take any interest in battle or wars whatsoever. So as a result, it just makes sense that they had to bring in this one clan that wasn't previously mentioned in game, I think.
I think they are.
Okay.
Aren't they the ones that are told to be on Tarthiad? They're the, oh crud, what's her name? The one that you get the ancient elven ring, the wedding ring from, or you get the drop and then you show it to her. Basically, she's the head of that clan, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. All right, well, that's fair then.
please no one jump on me if I'm wrong about that, because I didn't pay too much attention to that lore.
I'm sure you're right. I'm sure you're right.
Regardless, yeah, I think that's the only other clan, quote-unquote, that was not included in the original canonical eight. So,
all right.
I'm interested to see the Zerosian forces that fight alongside a dragon rider.
What will those be? Like,
yeah.
I mean,
I don't know. It'll be interesting because, we see some interesting stuff in the normal God Wars dungeon, but this is a very different scenario.
They could just bring in something that is maybe a little bit reminiscent of the life on Frenescape, perhaps, because if you think about the first God Wars dungeon, that was basically one of Armadale's first large appearances in the game through the generals and the minions there, the Aviancies. So those weren't in game before, so maybe they'll just do something like that for the Zerosian forces.
The thing is that the only Zerosian forces from Frenescape are the Majorat, and we won't be fighting any Majorat, I can tell you that. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe we get some vampires or some different demons.
Yeah, maybe.
Because, I mean, but, Sammy, yeah?
Yeah, it would have to split, though, because this would be a very important thing to determine what kind of demons would be Zaros aligned, which ones would be Zamorak aligned, because we haven't seen anything like that before.
Yeah.
It would also be interesting to see where if the vampires were to come into like this, like you mentioned, because let's not forget that the vampire quest line, that's still in the Fifth Age.
Yeah.
The previous one, at least. So.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of vampires did go to the Zamorakian side when...
Yeah, that jumped
at least
my
the ones
too.
That were on Gilinor. So, but I don't know if he'll be bringing any of these forces from their original homeworlds, or you never know with Zaros. So, it'll be interesting to see. I'm excited to. I'm not excited for the lore drops. Well, I'm excited for the lore drops. I'm just not excited to grind for them. But
Master Quest Point Kate be going away?
Yes, I fear. I mean, they haven't said explicitly. That it will happen. I just assumed it was implied because it's a thing with all the other God Wars dungeon generals. So I thought it would only, it's a precedent has been set. So I would just presume, but I don't know. I'd almost be a little disappointed if it doesn't, because.
Yeah, this is pretty major from, the way looking at it. I mean, Sliske having a role in this. The elves, which we didn't expect. Zamorak, of course, that signals a lot going forward. And then Zaros through Vindicta. Now, I mean, we've known for a while what this was going to be ultimately looking like. We knew Bandos wasn't going to be there because that's just a non-starter at this point.
Yeah.
But lack of Ceridoman forces?
I don't know. Like, maybe they just couldn't find an excuse or didn't want to find an excuse.
Yeah, because we're already up at four right now, right? So,
yeah.
Four factions.
They are featured
heavily in the original ones, but I don't know. Maybe that just means Ceridoman is going to be going down a peg in the near future on the godhood tiers once again.
Yeah, who knows?
Because remember, Jagex does drive the content here, and that is indicative of where the game is going to go lore-wise, inevitably. So focusing on these four is definitely a big thing. Mm-hmm. I think ever since Within the Light, we knew Saren and Zaros were going to be major forces going forward. And then, of course, Zamorak had a whole quest devoted to him and really explaining what he's about. So that makes sense right there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the elves. Saren elves. You get the idea, same thing. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Very interesting indeed. And, of course, Sliske. So, final memory. Did we go over that? No, I don't think we did we?
Yeah, I did. Okay. Basically, it's just the showdown where everybody's locked in a, ooh, I want to shoot you, but
okay,
if I
so
shoot
that's,
you,
that's why
I
we
can't
didn't spend too
guy.
Much time on it then.
Yeah, exactly.
So, what's going to come out of this?
I don't know. I mean, ultimately, again... if it's a permanent feature of the game, it's going to be an eternal stalemate. So I don't know if any of these gods will actually, unless they make it like a dynamic thing,
like
where it's like
a world event,
like almost world event-esque, where you can sort of vie for your faction. And basically at the end of the world event, the thing stays, but the winner is the winner regardless.
Yeah,
they'll still be fighting and you can still fight them, but I'd say that's the about the only way you can go about doing this.
Yeah, and I mean, we haven't heard anything to indicate that is going to be happening, so I don't think it would be wise to go forward assuming that, but it would definitely have provided an interesting way of, you know, framing this.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, we could have a world event that actually means something, but I'll save that digressing for past episodes.
What do you think will happen?
I don't know. I think that this is just a piece of content that's in here right now to get us acquainted with the lore of the Second God Wars dungeon. And it is probably going to be referenced in the quests going forward. That is what I have to think about this, in such ways that, you know, they'll make passing reference to the ongoing battle for the Heart of Gilinor in a certain quest. Maybe not the final quest, but one of the next two. They'll make ongoing reference to that. And then we'll have had the experience of being able to actually go and see that in such a way that tying this together with maybe mentioning it in a quest or two, that creates a really immersive experience for what we're ultimately wrapping up to at the end of the year with this. So I think it's just to enhance the whole storyline as a whole.
Yeah,
and give the players a nice combat update while we're at it. Which I think is what most people are going to be playing this content for, and hence why I asked if this was required to play God Wars Dungeon 2. I just have a couple of questions going forward that I'd like to get your opinion on. First things first, after doing this, you get what's called an anima crystal, and
yeah.
Basically the examine info says can be handed into a faction representative in the heart in exchange for reputation in that faction. Now, I don't know if this has been touched on anywhere in any of the live streams or whatnot. I don't watch the live streams.
Neither have I.
Yeah. And the main reason for that is because I honestly feel like sometimes the live streams give too much away of the content. And
yeah.
I kind of like to isolate myself until an update comes out, in addition to the first months behind the scenes, to just, you know, flow, to have a certain flow in my head of the way a piece of content is going to go, which I think has worked pretty well for me in the past, looking at live streams and content that's come out. I like just like forming my own opinion. But
that makes sense.
So what do you think these crystals are going to be used for, and what will the reputation in the faction do?
Gosh, there are a number of things. I mean, if it does turn out to be like this weird world event style thing, it could be sort of a boon, an initial like boost of points.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That's why I mentioned that.
To your chosen faction. And you can gain points for your faction by killing other generals.
Of course.
But you get that initial boost of a good amount of points by giving your faction that crystal. However, if it doesn't go that way, I could see it being the case. I don't know. Maybe where it strengthens you against a certain other faction.
Yeah. I was thinking that, oh, maybe it's going to be like this version's Shard of Zeros, but I don't think they would give that out quite just yet.
I mean, I think it shares the model, doesn't it? It's just green.
Does it?
I think so. Maybe I need to look closer.
No, the Shard of Zeros is more like a spike. This has more detail to it, actually,
oh, yeah.
I think.
Okay.
So, but that's certainly an interesting idea if that were the case.
Yeah.
Okay, the second question I have for you is the Heart of Gilinor. Now, obviously, we're going to jump through that big purple portal to go down there and battle the various critters and generals and whatnot. But do you think that this being located, or being rather located in the desert, has any relation to the fact that there's an elder god napping out there.
Only Jazz, you know.
Hmm?
Because Jazz is the one that's out there.
Oh, I didn't know that was the one. I thought that was one of the different ones, no?
Yeah, it's Jazz just to the southeast from that point.
No,
yeah.
I thought it was Wen.
No, it's Wen is Ice Mountain.
Oh, okay.
Or White Wolf Mountain, rather.
All right.
But, yeah. So
you think there could be any relation to that?
I think
Stone of Jazz, Heart of Gilinor, close to each other.
Could the Heart of Gilinor be the Elder Halls? That's a real stretch, and I really doubt that we're uncovering the Elder Halls of Gilinor.
No, they wouldn't put it in this kind of content, would they?
Yeah, I don't think so. That should come with a Zaros quest or something like
or
that.
Or an Elder God quest, but...
Yeah, unless we get down there and, Zaros is there and he's already dealing with things. That may be...
But just the fact they're linked together, I think there might be something going with that. I'm not sure what, but the locations are very close to each other, obviously.
Yeah, they are. And, looking from just like a game design sort of perspective, it's because they keep putting things in the desert because there's nothing in the desert.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of things everywhere else. And so they need to find a place where there's space to put things.
And, you know, that's probably what it comes down to, but I was just trying to look on the bright side and extend a bit of lore into the reasoning behind it and an in-game experience.
I like thinking of possibilities like that, and I think it would be nice if they tried to incorporate some of that kind of stuff, like that there's some sort of energy nearby and that they might be disturbing the Elder God by their activity that close, you know? Especially if it's deep down, causing a lot of, anima movement. I don't know.
Yeah,
who knows?
I don't know. And I have to say the most thing that I'm interested in with this coming update is any of the potential lore stuff with it. I could personally care less about the combat mechanics or what that'll do for combat in the game, whether this will be the next Araxor or the next Queen Black Dragon. I'm not too concerned about that. But I want to see where they go with lore in this and whether it's a stronger tie-in to Sliske's arc, which I'm assuming it's going to be, or if there's also going to be a bit of pushing off to the Elder God series, as I mentioned, very close to Jazz.
Yeah.
So that's where I go with that. You also do get some XP from this, an XP lamp that you can use in any of the skills that were... utilized throughout the tale, and that's divination, summoning, strength, slayer, and any of the other combat skills, of course, because you can use those for the various tasks. So that's there. But that's the first tale in RuneScape, and I certainly hope they'll do more of these because it's an interesting experience that's not a quest, but it provides what we like the most about questing, and that is going somewhere, numerous locations throughout the world, and uncovering some kind of artifact or lore trinket and then bringing it back to piece it together towards a biggest picture. And in the past, those were always my favorite kind of quests on RS. So I'm very happy with this update.
Agreed.
So
I think they did a good job. I mean, the way you found these locations was basically like Elite Clue, Direction Clue style, and which I love because obviously I've done, I think, 167 Elite Clue Scrolls in the last couple months.
Wow!
So I'm enjoying that, and so it was familiar territory.
Refreshing, though, right?
Were what?
I said it was refreshing compared to quests that are just linear.
Precisely.
So
I enjoyed it.
I mean, this could have fit in to any of the recent quests, you know, Dishonor Among Thieves, the Dragon Quest, the Dragon Rider Quest, the V Quest, the Elder God Quest. So, definitely keep doing these, Jagex. Very impressed with this.
Most assuredly.
All right. So, the question is, how many more weeks do we have to wait for the big update to come out? I don't know.
I guess 2.
Okay. Yeah, that would make sense. Alrighty, well, let's move on to some tweaks and fixes for the week. as mentioned last week, the Dwarven Instinct aura disappeared, but this week they brought some changes out to it to allow it to continue to function. If you previously had the aura, it is now workable again with these changes. The chance to receive a clue scroll from the chest has been lowered. How often did that happen?
Getting clue scrolls?
Yeah, from the chest of the Dwarven Instinct aura.
I think before it was like 1 in 10 or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was somewhat. I mean, like, if you didn't have any, you had a pretty good chance of getting one in the hour that you had it, because you get 7 tries if you're using your skills efficiently.
I mean, it doesn't matter that much today about how hard it is to get a clue scroll, because if you really want a clue scroll,
you get like 4 free every week from X and Y mini games.
Aquarium. What are the other ones that you're thinking of?
The Rag and Bone Man guy, the Skeletal Horror.
No, but that's not always, though.
Yeah, it is.
Really?
It's every week, right?
Yeah, you can do that every week, but he doesn't give a clue scroll every time.
Really?
No, I've only ever got one from him, and I've fought him numerous times, yeah.
I've fought him like 3 times, and I've gotten him each time.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. Maybe they changed it.
Huh. Yeah, I think they did, but regardless.
Elf thieving, also lots of clue scrolls come from that, any kind of combat, high level, so you're good on that. Players will now receive Triskelion key pieces instead of the whole key from the chest.
A little overpowered getting the whole key.
I think so, considering in my time of just playing RS and doing combat and whatnot, I've only ever put together 1 Triskelion key, so
really,
yeah. But remember, I don't do too much combat.
That's true. Well, or thieving, because that's where I get most of mine.
Okay, all right. The amount of gold received from the chest has been reduced by 25%.
Rip. Yeah, it used to be 100K.
Oh, well, that's still decent.
Oh, yeah. It's still a great aura. Like, I still use it every day because it's better than using nothing. So,
yeah. The amount of resources given has been lowered to give 3 to 10 resources at a time.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right. Also this week, an interesting little update regarding in-game participation of events. So if you go to a JMOD event in-game, once a day you can receive an event card, and you can exchange up to 5 cards for a medium star or 9 for a large star. And should you acquire either 15 or 25 cards, you'll receive an XP lamp, medium or large. And this is if you go to a JMOD event.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. And I kind of pointed this out to you when this came out this week. Mm-hmm. I mean, is this really the point we're at where you need to, have skilling nodes and whatnot at JMOD events, and you also need to have reward cards for going to JMOD events to try and get people to come and visit? Because it just feels like, I'm sure people would go to these if these weren't on offer, but it just feels as though it's trying a little bit too much to get people to attend these events.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a little bit of pandering to the XP culture.
Yeah, that's the point I was trying to make right there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't think it's good. I think it was maybe a necessary thing, unfortunately, to get players to come out, because that's just the stage that we're in, unfortunately. It's sad, but it's true.
This week you could have already had 3 of them. Monday, March 7th was Skill and Chill. Wednesday, the 9th was the Great Orb Project or Pest Control. Thursday, the 10th was Castle Wars or God Wars. And Friday is Fishing Trawler Castle Wars or Castle Wars. I'm sorry. And Sunday is Calfight King. So, you can basically get 1 per day if you go to these events. And it's an interesting way of getting bonus experience, I suppose, that can be useful going forward if you're on the hunt for bonus experience for a skill that you don't like and you don't want to do daily challenges, or you've done all your daily challenges to get treasure hunter keys and they haven't been useful to you. So there's that. But I don't know. This update just kind of rubbed me the wrong way, but it's in-game now. Should you ever attend a Jagex event?
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah. All right, on to other things in the patch notes. Players who have unlocked the 15-year anniversary emote can now perform the 2006 emote. You know what that is?
Yep, it's construction and the Fally Massacre.
Yeah, 2006. Of course it had to be something construction-related. Uh-huh. And of course, when you tie that in with what happened, it makes sense. And, you know, this is why I think that emote is so great, is because there's so many people who were not around in 2006 and will have no idea what that means. Because obviously you see the construction portal being built and whatnot, but then you see another player getting killed. And it's like, okay, where is that a part of construction? And then you realize, that was the Falador Massacre. And the Falador Massacre was actually done with ice spells, as is used in the emote, believe it or not. So... I got a real kick out of that. That just goes way back. So,
yeah, it's a cool level of detail they went to with that.
Yeah, and who would have thought at the time that looking forward 8 years, well, yeah, 8 years?
Wow.
Is 2000?
10 years.
10 years. Wow, 10. Ooh, I can't math. But looking forward, who would have thought that the 2006 as a whole would it be defined by construction and the Falador Massacre?
Yeah.
Well, I can see construction, but Falador Massacre, who would have known at the time? Were you around before construction came out and how everyone wanted various aspects of construction that were mentioned beforehand?
I came in, I think, 4 days after the fateful event of 666. I need to talk to Hans, but I think I'm between the 10th and 15th of June 2006 is when I began. So I missed it, unfortunately.
Okay. Well,
fortunately, depending on how you see it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it happened in the middle of the night our time, and it was early in the day UK time, so wouldn't have affected me either. But... looking back on it, construction was a skill that was initially promised in RS Classic by the name of Carpentry, which I'm sure most people know.
And you can sit on chairs.
Yeah, exactly. That is what construction was hinted at in the behind the scenes. You could sit on chairs and clockwork cats.
Uh-huh.
And that was the construction update that nobody knew was coming. Really? And has remained largely the same since then, but I think that's all right in a good way for what construction accomplishes.
Thing.
Yeah. So.
It could use an update, but it would take a lot of manpower.
I think there's bigger things to focus on.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Mining and smithing.
Mining and smithing. You took the words right out of my mouth there.
Yep.
So. All righty. Also, this week in the patch notes, Arav in the palace in... the quest Defender of Iraq had lost his head. He has now reclaimed it.
Good. Glad. That's good.
Gobi's now officially, now occasionally fall over, not officially.
This is great. I like this one.
Why?
Just adds to their, like, bumbling silliness. I think it's funny.
Yeah, a little childish one, right?
Kind of.
So.
Like, it didn't even need to happen. No one was crying for it to come. No one needed it. It's just kind of a, here, we added this fun little detail.
Yeah.
I like it.
The Phoenix Necklace now has a cooldown of 1 minute instead of 30 seconds.
Nerf.
Yeah. But, I mean, they destroy themselves when it happens, so.
They're nice, though. They're... fairly handy. You can carry multiple of them, and I mean, I used them a lot for Araxor when that first started, and I remember taking like 3 Phoenix necklaces at the beginning just to like switch out once one of mine would degrade, and then just keep, I'd end up with like no Phoenix necklaces, so that can hurt people with that switching the cooldown, but I think it was the right move because it was pretty giving with only a 30-second cooldown.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're using it on a quest boss or something like that, or a boss you're having trouble with, then that can definitely provide a nice cushion. So that was probably needed. Growler no longer causes players to retaliate when already in combat with another enemy. Excellent. It's always so annoying when that happens, when you are in combat with something and you start running somewhere else. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
The drop chances of the unique weapon components have been drastically improved for the Wildy Worm.
Good.
Good indeed. Very good indeed. Because, let's face it, who fights the Wildy Worm and who, as a result of fighting the Wildy Worm, is populating the market with the add-ons for the whip and the Staff of Light to make them level 85 weapons? People aren't.
Yeah.
Because we already have good level 85 weapons from ports. So this was a needed update. And, you know, even if it does make it, you know, almost interchangeable with the ports weapons, I think this is a good thing to have, because not everyone has all the level 90 skills or the time to level up player owned ports. And as a result, you can just pay a little bit and get a weapon rather than, you know, waiting for it to come through ports. So I'm happy about that.
Agreed.
Clicking on a locked title in the titles interface once again gives a message in the chat box detailing how to unlock it. I was wondering where that went. Because, you know, it existed at one point and then disappeared. So, yeah.
Good.
The following NPCs have had their combat stance rebalanced. Water fiends, ganodermic runts, fungal rodents, griefo pines, griefo larus, zogers and skogers, slash and bash, huge spider, player-owned house, guards, falador and bow crossbow variants, death spawn, tormented demons, giant bats, horned groks, saber-toothed kayaks, spine and spined larupias, the hunter creatures.
Wow. Very broad sweeping update.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at that, I mean, the water fiends, that makes sense because they're camped for their charms. Ganodermic creatures, once again, camp for their drops, especially after invention, and the polypore dust in order to charge the staff and whatnot. So that's good that that was done. Then, you know, of course, some lower level ones, ogres, skogers, huge spiders, guards, death spawns, those are basically things that were strong back in the day, but now can practically be one hit. So definitely needed.
A little bit of a boost.
Yeah, yeah. The warning on the frozen doorway to next can now be toggled off in Doomsayer settings. That's good, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to be going down to next unless you know what you're absolutely doing.
For the most part, yeah.
There's a now a yes and don't ask me again option when paying farmers to remove and protect a tree patch.
Very good.
Yeah, and I mean, the only thing I have to say to people here is that if you're going to be accepting this option here, then don't do it on an elder tree and don't automatically remove that tree if you don't have an elder seed, in case you're using it for logs, because it is pretty close to the banking chest there if you do want to use it as something to chop wood from. So, yeah, just make sure that you keep that in mind, because elder seeds and whatnot are something that take a long time to grow back compared to all the other trees.
Very true.
Players are now offered a free teleport within the rune span to a yellow wizard if he teleports away as the player teleports to him with the Infinity Etherol outfit.
Yet another benefit to one of their treasure hunter outfits. Great.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think that one was that common, was it?
What?
The rune Etherol outfit.
It's extremely rare. That's the thing. It's like, this would have been a nice benefit, because the amount of times when I was going for 99 runecrafting that I would like literally be teleporting, like hopping to the island or about to click on the yellow wizard and he teleports away. It's like, I mean, probably 5 to 10 times, which is not very many, but it's frustrating. So that would have been a nice thing to have for people in general, but I guess the outfit gets
it. Well, they got it now.
Yeah, if they have the extremely hard to get overpowered outfit that's now basically impossible to get, unless Vic the Trader's around and you buy a lot of bonus XP.
I don't know.
But that's just me.
That's just the way the ball bounces, unfortunately, with Treasure Hunter. So,
I know.
Let's talk about something that's not overpowered then this week's... or rather, do you have anything else in the patch notes that I might have missed?
One thing I looked at, and maybe it's just me. It says players can now store and reclaim the following books from a player-owned house bookshelf once they have read them: the Ancient Tarthian Journal, the Weathered Tarthian Journal, and the Dusty Tarthian Journal. I got all three. They're not actually requirements for Questmaster Cape. They're looking at adding them. They were just something that were looked over because this content was released during the development of the Questmaster Cape. But I have them in my bank, and I noticed that unlike most other books, I could not put them in the bookshelf. So for a long time, I've just kept them in the bank. They take up three bank spots. I mean, it's a pain, but whatever. So I've left them there, but I took them out this week. Like, oh yes, I can free up three bank spaces. And I took them over, to my house, used them on the bookshelf, and it said that I couldn't, like, there's not room for them. So, and I even tried, like, I was like, wait a minute, do I not have the highest, like, level of shelves?
Yeah, that shouldn't matter.
Yeah, and I built them again, and again did not let me store them. So maybe it's because I haven't clicked on them since the update. I haven't read them since the update. Maybe I should try that, because it says if you've read them.
Because when you read a book, it adds it to that, you know, bookshelf. That's not necessarily a bookshelf, just the amount of books that you can reclaim, and then the bookshelf acts as a front for that. So
see, I read them before they were added.
Yeah,
they were able to be.
Yeah,
added, so.
But the thing is, you can. I actually remember putting things on the shelf, so you should actually be able to do that. So I'd report that as a bug.
Yeah, I'll try it again in a bit, but that's weird.
All right.
Anyhow,
that it.
Yep, that is it. All I have from the patch notes.
All right, and also the ancient outfits this week on Solomon's store to go with. God Wars Dungeon 2 release. I think I kind of like the way these look. What do you think?
I think they look really freaking weird.
Really?
I do. At least the... Okay, come on. And I'm sorry to be the one to say this, but could they have not made the female, like, exhibiting so much of her wares in this photo? Is that really necessary?
No, it's not. And
I was just like, good. Put on some clothes, lady.
And this is what I've been saying for RuneScape stuff for quite some time.
Well, I don't think at least in game. Oh, there's some stuff in game that's bad, but this is like art, like almost concept art for it, and it's like it's even more explicit in a at least in my view. It just seems. And I'm not trying to be real prudish here, because it's a game and whatever, and people can do whatever they want, but it's in my face, and it's on the login screen, and I've just seen it all week, and I'm just like, okay, this lady's...
You know, I didn't notice that until you mentioned it.
That's where my mind went first. I'll be real honest, but yeah. Regardless, that's a thing. Ah! It does let me add them now. Hooray!
Oh, good. And I'm just wishing that, well, not wishing necessarily, but you remember there was, I'm not sure if people are aware of this, but there was a title that Reed wanted to use last year, and he never got that his chance.
Something about, look at those bazongas or something like that.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
That means we have to use that title this week, right? Because then I can tell Reed that I succeeded where he failed.
Oh, I'm actually in conversation with him right now, and I showed him the image, and he insisted that we have to do that.
That's great. I love it. It's up to you, dear leader.
We'll talk about that in the post show.
Exactly.
But, all right.
Moving swiftly on.
And, you know, this is actually an outfit I think I could see myself purchasing if it had a color change option. Though it probably does, right?
Yeah, I mean, most Solomon's General Store stuff does.
All right. I'll look into how much that costs, and maybe I can use the rest of my 2013 rune coins up.
Yeah. You still have those?
Yep, yep. Nice. I got 1,500, and I think I have around 450 left.
You've been collecting interest on them, of course, right?
I wish.
Solomon offers interest.
I wish I was. All right. Well, moving on from that, we do have a treasure hunter update this week, and that is the Nimble and Fletcher outfits.
Hmm.
So the Nimble is, of course, for agility. Fletcher has a kind of a boring title compared to the agility one. You can basically collect feathers while skilling in either agility or fletching, or, of course, find them on Treasure Hunter. Then once you have enough, you bring them to the Drill Sergeant in Berthorpe, or Allison in Taverly, and you'll be able to trade these feathers in for outfit pieces or lamps. Each outfit piece requires 500 feathers, and each time you obtain one, you'll get the XP equivalent to a large lamp in that related skill.
Hmm.
Yeah. You know, I got 75 of them on the first day for the treasure hunter stuff.
As did I.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe that was common then. But, you know, I wasn't initially thinking of going for them. But maybe I'll go for the agility one now while doing agility and see if how many feathers I can get.
Yeah? I want the fletching one.
Oh, why?
I don't have 99 fletching. I know, right?
Wow.
It seems backwards. I have lots of 99. Oh, just got 75. I'm doing my daily spins. But... yeah, I just don't. I don't know why I've never really liked fletching, so I just don't do it. I'll do it eventually. I just, eh.
Yeah, it is kind of a. It's a skill that's not necessarily needed today, because you remember it was brought in to balance out smithing, because smithing would allow the melee people to create their own weapons. Fletching would allow the archers to create their own bows, and then of course with RS2 we got runecrafting.
Yeah.
But of course, who creates anything with fletching today when the most common thing you use is Royal Bolts if you're in level 80? Or
I mean, it
whatever.
Was super, super profitable during the that initial period of invention coming out.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I mean, even now, let me just do a quick price check. I think it is still possible to... make a profit by high elking you shield bows.
Oh, you can make a profit just by I think cutting and selling like magic to unstrung magic or something like that, or stringing.
You log There's is 230 GP, 394 for the bow, and the shield bow elks for 768. So I mean, yeah, there's still profit to be had from doing it that way. So
definitely.
See, the reason I think of maybe getting the agility one is because I think agility might be a 120 I want to get one day.
Really?
Yeah, because my initial 399s were farming, herb lore, and wood cutting. And then after that, I ended up with fire making for some odd reason. And then I think either the next one or the one following that was agility through a race with some very important people. Mm-hmm. So might as well get agility again one day. We'll see. But so I have until the 14th to do this.
Yeah.
All right. And of course, anyways, the main reason I wanted to talk about this is I think it's an interesting mechanic rather than, you know, putting them on the exchange and just relying on people to get them through Treasure Hunter. You can get them through skilling. So what do we think of that as a mechanic for getting Treasure Hunter items? I mean, we've had that bit with the Valentine hearts, but
I think it's good. I mean, of course, that's been my biggest issue, especially with the like the magic golem, the rune ethereal outfit, basically the ones where you have three different sets that you have to then combine to get the actual good perks, which then means that you have triple the amount of stuff that you have to get from Treasure Hunter in order to and then the outfit ends up being ridiculously OP in its completed form, I'm not a big fan of those. But I am a fan of these that are a little bit more simple, and if you can get them somehow in game, in addition to your daily spins, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, indeed. And I mean, I think if this kind of thing had started happening when Treasure Hunter first came out, there would have been less initial outcry to it. So I definitely commend Jagex for doing this now, and it's always better to have something happen at all later or sooner, later rather than never. There we go.
Yeah, agreed.
Alrighty. The only other piece of RS stuff to really touch on is that we learned that the next beta weekend will be on March 18th.
Woo! Week. One
yes.
week.
So, I am looking forward to that. And
nice.
First time I came back on regular RS after the first NXT beta weekend, I tried to move the minimap with my mouse and sadly was not able to make that happen. So, look forward to doing more testing this time on OS 10 and whatnot, more benchmarking with that, so that'll be good. So,
yeah.
And, you know, once again, same entry conditions, membership since January 31st, 2012, or Gold Premier Club member.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty. Well, we don't have any questions this week, but I will say that if you want to send them in, just send them to update.rsbnb.com/ask. Or email us questions at rsbnb.com. Or if you want to talk to us, we'd like your voicemails. Email them or leave us a voicemail at 571-57-BNB, which is 572-2632.
Woo.
Alrighty, so on to tech news we go. So,
yep.
Are you aware of something called Google Fi?
No, but I am now.
Alright, so Google Fi is Google's ambitious plan to offer cell phone service in various markets. It was invite-only, launched about a year ago, but today anyone in the U.S. can sign up for it. They partner with T-Mobile and Sprint. So if you are on those networks, you'll have an idea of how it works. But basically, you can also get a good deal if you're looking for a new Android phone. So you can get the Nexus 5X Android phone for $199. That's $150 off the retail price, assuming you use it and activate it on the Fi network, which is, of course, T-Mobile and Sprint. Now, the really interesting part about Fi is that you pay a single base price of $20 a month only, and then let's say you want 3 gigabytes of data. You'll pay $30 for that, $10 per gigabyte of data. So it's a really granular way of paying for your cellular coverage, because not only do you get the data, but you get unlimited calling and texting in the U.S. But what happens is there is a rollover of the data that you have, so it's not as draconian as other cellular networks out there.
Hmm.
So if you are looking for a new phone that is Android-based, you might want to look at the Nexus 5X, a decent price for this, $150 off, and connect it to Google Fi and, you know, have a modern, what I feel looks like a modern cellular carrier.
Yeah, that looks really neat.
Yeah, who are you on for your...
I am with AT&T right now.
Yeah, that seems to be the really big one there.
Especially in this area, in terms of service, in this region of the country at least, it's definitely superior.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Do you know anyone on Sprint or Verizon or T-Mobile rather?
My fiance was on T-Mobile for a while. She hated it. Service was bad. I think Verizon's pretty decent around here. There are a good amount of people with Verizon still around here. It's mostly AT&T, but there's a good mix. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just trying to access the Fi Google website, but it tries to get me to sign in. But of course, that's not a possibility because I do not have an American number. So I have to basically go to a window that doesn't have a Google number. But basically, yeah, this is the way it works. $20 for the basics, $10 for data, no contract, and you don't pay for unused data. They say it's hard to predict your data usage when it changes month to month. 1 month you're streaming live sports, the next you're just checking email. At the end of that month, you'll get your unused data credited to you in dollars and cents, so you only pay for what you use.
That's nice.
So that is what Google Fi is all about. And it, you know, it really says something about what Google feels internet access should be like, which I commend them for.
Yeah. So, if it were with AT&T, I really think I would go with this.
Yeah, and I think the reason it's not with AT&T is because I think Google prefers the network that T-Mobile and Sprint have. I think it's a different kind of network. So
it definitely is.
Yeah,
and I don't blame them. It seems like something that fits better with them, but it's just like this is really attractive. I mean,
yeah, this would be a great thing to have in Canada, to have Google come in upend the mobile landscape, because here it's even worse, more criminal than it is in the US, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
If you don't have a texting plan, it costs you 40 cents to send a text message.
Oh, I remember that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So there's that. And though thankfully with most plans, these day and age, you have unlimited local calling, and some even have unlimited national calling too, which I was surprised is actually standard in the US.
Yeah, it definitely is. Like, calling is like, it's like breathing. It's sort of a right. If you're denied the ability to call, then something's wrong.
All right. Well, if you're looking for a new phone and you're willing to go with Android, that might be something to look into.
Yeah.
All right. So, something on the Apple side now that's not related to the encryption situation.
Oh, thank the Lord.
The first known ransom attack on a Mac computer was discovered this past weekend.
Dun, dun, dun.
There was more than 6,000 copies of a BitTorrent client called as Transmit that were downloaded, and this ransomware was put onto those people's computers. Luckily, they were able to catch this before it was able to start doing real damage. And, you know, this is just something that's going to start happening as people start targeting the platform more, as it gets a higher prominence.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, ransomware, for anyone who doesn't know, is when you're forced to pay a certain extortion fee to have your files unlocked or decrypted as a result of what the ransomware decides to encrypt on your computer. So, you always have to be careful with what you're downloading. And this was from probably the most popular BitTorrent client on OS X this week, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Which, I mean, when something like that can happen from a third-party website, it kind of underscores the reason why people should try and use the App Store when they're getting OS X-based applications.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's just something that's inevitably going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if this thing were to become widespread, Apple actually does have a mechanism where they can ship out an update to a Mac computer that will render that piece of malware unusable just because of how the operating system is written. So that's only been done once or twice before, but it would be able to happen should something go wrong with this.
Sort of a doomsday button.
Yes. But of course, the big thing to take away from this is that all platforms are able to be attacked, and you just really need to be careful with what you're downloading on the internet. So I would highly recommend that everyone who uses a Mac just focus on getting applications from the Mac App Store.
Yes.
Those are guaranteed to be safe. I don't want to say 100% of the time, but close to 100% of the time.
Yep. Practice safe internet, everyone.
Exactly. And I mean, you mentioned safe internet, and that's the number one thing you can do online. That means, you know, don't open strange attachments that you might get in an email. Don't open emails if you don't know who it's from. Don't click on links in those email addresses. Don't go to websites that have tons of ads on them. Don't use pirated software.
That Nigerian prince does not need your help.
Exactly. Exactly. Use a browser that has the ability to control things, which most of them do. Even Edge on Windows 10 is good. But if you're on an older version of Windows 10, definitely get Chrome or Firefox, preferably Chrome.
Yeah.
And I mean, we just had a little example of safe interneting here. While doing the show, my Safari web browser decided it wanted to try and update Flash, which, I mean, yes, that's okay, but why can't Apple update its own version of Flash just like Google does with Chrome? I think we're at a point where we can do that. Because the less you get people to download, the safer their systems will be. And that's why platforms like iOS and mobile tablets in general are just a very attractive platform for people who want a low-fuss computing experience. So, I know not many of you are Mac users out there, but I just wanted to highlight this for the entire audience to just practice safe internet practices. Alrighty, and our last piece of tech news relates to the founder of email who has passed away.
Rest in peace.
On March 5th, Ray Tomlinson, he basically created the first email system and, basically decided that, yes, you're going to have an at symbol in the email address, and that's going to determine what server it's going to. So the first email was created, I want to say, in the 70s at some point, and ever since then, it has just become the main form of communication that we do online, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Some people like email, other people despise it, and there's been numerous efforts to try and reform email along the way, from the Inbox Zero initiatives such as Google Inbox and Mailbox to Facebook's hybrid email and instant messaging chat. So all that has come from this one source of initial email, which when you break it down is actually a really simple protocol that allows systems to communicate with each other and users on that system to communicate with each other. Because believe it or not, back in the olden days, before the internet, before the WWW, you could communicate with various Unix systems across the internet and just check your email on a standard terminal before we had all this web email stuff. So it's a very simplistic protocol. And at the end of the day, it serves its purpose. And at its core, it's simple. And we just can't leave it for some reason. So... But yeah. This is just a bit of internet history for everyone out there, since I'd imagine most people use email or at least read every day.
Definitely. I mean, especially in college and stuff like that, that is the way that people communicate with you, at least around here. And I don't know, like I grew up with email, and so not having email, it's just, where would we be without that kind of technology? That was a huge step forward.
Yeah, indeed. So this is just some news that I thought I'd pass along to everyone.
Yeah, definitely.
All righty. Well, let's move on to some other things, specifically the invention skill of the month update. We knew this was going to be an interesting one going in, and we've had, you know, not too much of an interest in this.
I hate to point the finger like immediately, but I think it's because of the ridiculous amount of delay I haven't said anything, but I'm a little bit frustrated with the fact that there's still nothing for skilling.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's the biggest thing, is that people are just absolutely burnt out with combat. I mean, you go the entire month, if you're wanting to train it at all, to get any decent level. And I don't know. I just, at this point, that's why I entered the skill of the month, because I thought that I would be able to do, rely on skilling for most of the XP. But apparently that's not the case. So that's a little frustrating. Really hoping that comes out next week.
Not right now. So we will need it.
Yeah, exactly. So regardless, anyhow, continue.
Parnassius in first place with 7.5 million experience gained. In a distant second is Devo with 1.7. And in third place is JamAndy52 with 1.5. And then in fourth place, Tim has returned. He has 1.2 million XP gained.
Yeah, I've seen him around, so we're glad to have you back, Tim.
Yes, everyone is wondering where Tim went and
could have dropped off the face of the earth for a while.
Yeah, but I mean, it's certainly going to be interesting to see what we could do in the rest of this month here with Invention, given how fast Invention was leveled. At this point, it's anyone's game. I'd even say it's your game if you really wanted to put your nose to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think anyone could do it. I mean, it's a skill. Obviously, we saw how fast people were able to get to 200 mil. Shakes head. But, yeah, I think it really could belong to anyone. It's just a matter of time and effort.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, speaking of that, you have 122 XP gain.
It's more than nothing, all right?
All righty. Well,
breaking things down here and there.
Well,
here, I'm going to break down another thing. Here goes a water battle staff.
Oh, God.
Oof, 9 XP, baby. That XP drop. Oof.
Well, let's go for some achievements of the week then. I'll handle these this week since it's nice and short. Parnassius got 99 invention on the 8th. Congratulations. Also, Jesse Pinkman, a.k.a. Flash, 120 divination on March 6th. And Tim got 99 runecrafting on March 4th.
Yay!
So there's Tim once again starting up his achievements and making progress on RS. And, of course, congratulations to everyone who got achievements this week. And, yes, you can expect to see more 120s going forward on RS BNB update in terms of achievements. So if you do get a 120, we'll note that down, even if you don't sign it or see it on the high scores page, because the way the 120s work is they are calculated differently than the standard achievements, just because the high score system does not do virtual leveling.
That's really cool. How long did it take for you to get it to do that?
Like 15 minutes.
Oh, really? Oh. Wow.
Yeah, because we have all the data. We have the data points for how much XP a person has each day. So we basically say if this person has crossed 104 or whatever million XP, then just let's note it down as 120 for that skill for the week.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. Everything is done with numbers on the back end.
Nice. That's handy then.
Yeah, it is. All right. And I have a pick of the week for everyone this week.
Tell us about it.
Well, for those of you guys on Windows, which is the vast majority of you, sometimes you might be wondering what exactly is going on with my network traffic. Now, I know that in most parts of the world, we don't have really limited bandwidth gaps in terms of how much bandwidth you can use per month. But some of us do, and you know, sometimes you might just like to keep an information out there for various tracking purposes. So this is a Windows application called Networks. It's spelled with an X rather than a KS, so NETWORX. It's available for Windows, and basically it will track your traffic on a device on your computer for a certain time period, whether it be a month or a week, and then you can see various graphs and look and see where that's coming from. So you can track it by day and see if you had a huge spike when you watched that 4K Netflix movie, or you know, if someone else on your network is causing problems. Because with networks, you can actually monitor other interfaces and look at local traffic within the LAN, because sometimes you can have your network send all traffic to all the ports, which allows you to basically look at traffic that happens on the LAN that you're not exactly downloading or uploading. So Networks does allow you to do that as well if you want to get more advanced with it, but it's all in all a very good application to have if you're just looking to see keep track of how much internet you're actually using, which if you've never done that before, it can be really eye-opening if you look at a standard session involving YouTube or, you know, Netflix or anything like that. You don't think you're using that much information, but you actually are.
Yeah.
So it's just an interesting way to track it out. So,
Very cool.
Yeah. That's at, it's a very long URL, so you can find it in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com, but it's called Networks with an X. And that's for Windows. So have a look if you're at all interested in tracking the amount of network usage that your system is using.
Very nice.
All righty. So what have you been up to?
A lot of things. My sister's wedding is this weekend. And
that's why we're recording on Thursday.
Yeah, sorry, guys. And so I have to do all that stuff, which, I don't want to make it seem like it's like some obligation. I'm really excited about it. It's cool.
And it's going to be good practice.
Yeah, exactly. My own is in 2.5 months. So, yeah, a lot of things going on in life, planning for that, and midterms finished up this week. Spring break next week, which will be nice. Just going to work, basically. So, fun stuff. So, that's what I've been up to. In game, I've just still on the Clue grind. Just finished my 168th elite. So, getting up there. Still nothing great. Everything is middling. But what are you going to do? It'll come out one day.
Yep. Your ship will come in.
And, exactly.
I mean, what would you do if you got one of those dies?
I would freak out. I've always wondered, like, because I'm often, and this, good thing she doesn't listen to this show, but, like, if I'm calling my fiance, typically I'll, like, be AFK on RuneScape, and I can do, I've gotten to the point where I can do clue scrolls, especially puzzle boxes, like, AFK. I can talk and do them at the same time. It's not difficult. And so I'll, like, be talking to her, and I'm scared that I will get a die while I'm talking to her, and I'll just absolutely flip it, and I will go nuts, and she will just wonder what happened. So hopefully that doesn't happen, or maybe hopefully it does. Maybe, who knows? We'll see.
That could be very interesting indeed. All right.
Yeah, I think she'd understand.
Well, yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, she knows you play the game, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, she does.
Well, there you go.
What about you?
Well, as I mentioned after last week's show, I came down with something, and today is the first day I feel 100% back to normal, which is good, and I was wondering if I would, you know, have any issues chatting through this show, but evidently I have not, so I'm really happy about that. But also, this week on RS, you know, just same thing you've been doing, waiting for that update to come that'll allow me to start my woodcutting goal. So aside from that, just farming divine energy and a couple of herb runs thrown in here and there. And I think I'll spend this weekend doing agility. See if I can get that outfit. But I don't think my chances are high.
Yeah, you never know.
Because I've heard the drop rate for those is really, really slow compared to when you can get it on Treasure Hunter or something like that. So anyways, that's about it, and yeah, we'll see you all next week. We don't know what we'll be talking about next week, but I'm assuming it won't be the God Wars. But
I think there will be another update. I've heard that they're going to do something every week until it comes up, so I don't know if it'll be as big as the Tales, but there may be something.
Yeah, there will be something related to it, because they are ramping up to it at the end of the month. Yeah, so, but this was a good way to get our feet wet with the lore, and I'm actually excited now to see what's happening in terms of God Wars Dungeon 2. So we have that to look forward to for this month. Who'd have ever thought I'd be interested about a combat update?
Well, it's not exactly the case that you're into it for the combat.
This is true. It's mainly the lore.
Yes, so. And the implications behind it.
Alrighty, well, we'll see you next week, everyone. Thank you for listening and sharing your time with us. And if you want to chat with us, remember we're in Friends Chat, Bits Bytes. See you next week, everyone.
Farewell, all.